Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal, Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Bennett, and each week we talk about UFOs or, of course, the paranormal, whether it's ghosts or near-death experiences, past lives, reincarnation. This is the kind of stuff I am interested in and I want to talk about, and I know you are too. And tonight, I'm very excited about our guest. His name is Timothy Wiley. He is the author of several books, including Dolphins, Extraterrestrials, and Angels, which is mostly what we're going to talk about tonight. But before I get into my guest, let me give you a little bit of UFO news, because we do have some really interesting and kind of bizarre stuff going on right now. First, let me tell you about a couple of new books that have been released. Marilyn Hughes, she was a guest on my show in the past about out-of-body experiences. She's written a bunch of books. She's released another book called Touched by the Nails, Watch and Wait, A Karmic Journey Revealed. If it's anything like her other books, I'm sure it's great. I have not read it yet, but I will probably order it shortly. Another book that has just been released is, let me see, written by Don Schmidt and Tom Carey, who are actually Roswell UFO crash investigators. And they've written yet another book about Roswell. Now, this is probably one of the most written about UFO incidents. And do we need another book? Well, apparently they've got a lot of new information. It's called Witness to Roswell, Unmasking the 60-Year Cover-Up. And they are, in fact, leading investigators, and Donald R. Schmidt has written other books, some of the leading books, on Roswell. So that should be interesting. I will definitely be reading that one as well. Okay, what else do we got going on here? There is a UFO photograph that's running around the Internet, which is causing a lot of buzz. It's about a photograph of a UFO, apparently, next to the moon, or a strange cloud-type object. And like many UFO photographs, it's really not that impressive, and it's kind of ambiguous, and pretty much most of the investigators are saying it looks like a lens flare to them. So I don't know, make of it what you will. Let me see, what else do we got going on? In England, there is a famous person, the group Wildheart, a musical group, has a frontman named Ginger. This is actually a British glam rocker. His real name is David Walls. And he has now come out of the UFO closet as an abductee. He says that when he was 5 years old, he believed he was taken on board a UFO. And he can't prove it. He went under hypnotic regression but was unable to actually recall the memory of it. But what he does remember, and here I'm going to just quote him, "All I remember about the UFO was that it was huge and it came across the houses and then absolutely nothing, and just running to my friend's house, and when I woke up, it was cold and dark. My friend was in hysterics, he was crying, and his mother was like, 'You go away.' We moved from the area soon afterwards, so I never found out what happened." So there's another famous person saying that they were abducted by UFOs. I'm sure there's a lot of others out there. And here's what I think very interesting, this recent UFO sighting going on. Well, here's one in Canada. I mean, last week I told you about a UFO sighting in Canada, which a lady saw this very large object, and out of it was coming smaller balls of light. Well, this sighting is amazing. There's this very large triangular UFO spotted in Canada over the University College of the Fraser Valley campus. There were two witnesses at least, Dave Francis and Kelly McDonald. And Francis is totally convinced it was a UFO. He says, "I don't really care if anybody else believes me. It was the craziest thing I ever saw." What he saw was this large triangular object. And he says, quote here, "It broke apart into 20 or more of these little spheres. Birds don't dive bomb in at each other." So he saw this object actually break up into 20 little white objects, which is amazing because there was just recently a big rash of sightings down in Peru. And this is also apparently involving these same white spheres of light. And up to 40 or 50 of them. And these are caught on video. This started in the November of 2006, and just in May of 2007, it was videotaped and aired on the news, Channel 9, in Lima, Peru. This was on May 20th, actually, is when it was filmed. And people all across Peru and through the zone of ACHOs in the downtown area of Lima saw these objects. They were white spheres. They're not sure how high up they were. Probably they're estimating at least 2,000 meters. And there was at least 40 of these objects, 30 to 50 of these objects. So it's very unusual that all these white balls of light are appearing suddenly. And that's what we got going on. There's a few other UFO sightings, but I think we'll just get to our guest right now. I'm very, very excited. Our guest is Timothy Wiley, and as I said, he is an author. He's actually followed several professions, including architect, businessman, artist, musician, a traveling monk, and a spiritual researcher and author. He is the author of Dolphins, Extraterrestrials, and Angels, which is published in 1984 and is still in print. That's impressive. He's also a co-author of the book Ask Your Angels, which has sold almost 750,000 copies and has been translated into 11 languages. Wow. And his third book, Adventures Among Spiritual Intelligences, has just been reprinted, actually, by Origin Press. It was originally published by Bear. And we have his website here is actually his name, Timothy Wiley, that's WYLLIE.com. Timothy, thank you for coming on to the show.
Well, thank you, Preston. Very, very full introduction. Thank you.
I'm very, very excited to finally meet you. We've kind of met other people who know each other but never had a chance to meet each other.
Yes, indeed. Kisara, she's related to you, I think, isn't she?
Yes, Kisara is actually my sister-in-law.
Yes, sister-in-law, that's right.
Yeah, she's a very well-known UFO artist who does a lot of my illustrations for me.
Wonderful work.
So, Timothy, wow, three books. And this all started, is that right, with the near-death experience in, let me see, when was that,
1973? I think they kind of kicked it into a higher gear. I think it had been going on for quite a lot earlier. And the more I kind of dig into my past life, the more I can kind of see signs of it kind of poking through. But yeah, the near-death experience was the thing that really kicked it off, because it went through a whole series of different moves in the near-death experience, each one kind of validating a particular area of the transcendent reality, none of which I really gave much thought to tell you the truth before it.
So what happened with this near-death experience?
I found myself... I actually didn't have the experience actually leaving my body. I found myself out of my body, looking down at my body. And I was way about 500 feet up in the air and in a big wide valley, and a monorail car sort of flashing past. And I found myself in that monorail car. Strange how that happens. And then a very light being at one end of the car came forward, and I heard in my head this being saying, you know you're dying, don't you? And I said, yeah. And they caused me to look down, and I could see my body floating in the bath, you know, below. And they said, well, you've done what you came to do, and we're going to give you a choice. You can either go on or you can go back. I decided, after a moment or two thought, rather irrationally, to go back. And there was a tremendous explosion of joy, I must confess. That surprised me. That was my first real vision of angels, and just the sky filled with angels. And it had that probably preternaturally real quality that this reality just simply doesn't have. Everything was bright and absolutely full of life. And then I was taken through a series of changes into a large sort of chamber that actually awfully like a lot of these abduction experiences, except I was truly very ill, and they put me on this table and dug a machine into my stomach, and I remember this being telling me, this is going to hurt very badly, but it was only going to be very brief, and it did hurt very badly, and it was very brief, thank goodness. And
wow.
Then they took me off, and then they sort of wheeled me through somewhere, which I didn't actually have, they told me I'd forget all about it. And I had no idea where it was until I read one of Bob Monroe's books, one of his out-of-the-body books. And he described the place he'd been taken, and he talked actually in somewhat the same way about it. He would forget a lot about it, but he actually remembered it to be in heaven. I feel rather embarrassed to say it, but I think they will be probably through heaven. And then I came zinging down into my body again. Healed, my goodness, healed.
I don't doubt it. I've actually wrote an article about people who have had healings as a result of out-of-body experiences and near-death experiences and things like that.
Well, that's very interesting, Chris. And, of course, now the thing is, of course, I'm going to be much more interested in asking you questions. Now, was there any, in the stuff that you studied, any talk about being given the choice to go on or come back? Or what was the general situation that they met when they sort of moved across the other side?
Oh, most people who have near-death experiences are not really given a choice. They're told that they have to go back and they have more to do. So it's interesting that you were given a choice.
Yeah.
But some people are. And of course, if someone chooses to go on, we wouldn't know it.
We would never know. Have you had that experience back then?
I have not had a near-death experience, but, you know, my mom died in 1984, and following that, I picked up Robert Monroe's book and learned how to do out-of-body experiences and actually got really good at it. And I was able to visit these heavenly realms. And I know exactly what you're saying when you say it's unbelievably real, very vivid and colorful. Preternaturally, is that the word you used?
Yes.
It's just unbelievably vivid and more lifelike than this reality. And very
really
loving. And
yes, of course. And it's awfully hard to explain to people when you come back, because, of course, one loses all fear of death. Death becomes absurd in those circumstances, you know, because there's almost something to look forward to in a perverse kind of way. But it's hard to get across to people, you know, who were, you know, collectively so hypnotized by our fear of death and all this gun pointing and TV and stuff, that it's very hard to sort of get across that it's really something to be looked forward to.
Right, and it's funny, everyone does it actually every night. People say, I don't remember my dreams and stuff. And the fact is that they're actually out there doing stuff, whether they remember it or not. So
that's why
it is
familiar, I think, when you go there.
And sooner or later, this subject will catch on, you know, out-of-body experiences and near-death experiences. Well, actually, you know, the near-death experience is extremely popular. Raymond Moody's book, Life After Death, sells like 100,000 copies per year. It has for many, many years.
Yeah. And there's some quite interesting research going on now by really quite serious scientists, you know, into the phenomenon. People who take the thing seriously as opposed to just a rejected a lot of random neurons bouncing around, which, you know, would be so, you know, if any of these people actually had one of those experiences, they simply would not be able to say, oh, this is just, the brain sort of dying and throwing out random images. Because if it was like that, I mean, we've all had that sort of stuff happen every once in a while. You know, you get knocked unconscious or something like that, you know.
Right.
But it's not like that. It's, as you say, it's just incredibly coherent, real, loving reality.
Right.
Anyway.
All it takes is one experience to convince you, and it's really hard to convince someone unless they have the experience themselves.
Well, it is true. Now, I don't know if this is true for you, Preston, but what happened to me is it was so raw, and it was so, in a sense, it broke open my belief system so completely that I actually had to, in a sense, push it aside for a number of years. Although, looking back, I can see how it worked on me in a subconscious way. But it took another 7 years after that until I actually recontacted the angels through a channel up in Toronto. Brilliant young man, just fell naturally into a light trance, and the angels would speak through him. And it all sort of started coming together at that point for me.
Wow, so at that, after the near-death experience and stuff, it was just too much to handle?
It really was, yeah. It really was. I mean, I was stuck in a situation, as we all are, you know, in sort of early 30s, got a whole life going, you know, and suddenly something happens that turns one's life completely upside down. And you realize you have to kind of work your way out of the life that you've created for yourself, somehow sort of recreate it in a sort of deeper, more meaningful reality, which is actually what I did, but it took me, I don't know, 5 or 6 years to do it.
Right, right. Well, I had to restructure my whole belief system and worldview after I found out UFOs were real. It was never taught in college.
Yes, and, right.
all that stuff, you know. And then, of course, that led to near, you know, out-of-body experiences, ghosts, and all that. So
I know. Once you open the door, I know that's a wonderful thing about it. That's what I often tell people who are rather skeptical. I say, well, it's all very, very fine to be skeptical. Jolly good, very good viewpoint. Why don't you just hang it on a hook for a little bit and proceed on an as-if basis, as if UFOs are real, as if out-of-the-body experiences are authentic, you know, and see what happens. You can always pick up on the skepticism later if you don't want to, you know.
Right, right. Well, most people have at least, I think, one unexplained experience in their lives, whether they admit to other people or not.
I've always thought three. The generous-hearted. I think yes, we do. Of course we do. I think they could refuse to say that. Of course we do. And it's how we react to those experiences, whether we pick up on them or not.
Right.
You know, really kind of guide by life.
So you traveled all over Europe, huh? As a monk?
As a traveling monk. I did.
Oh, right.
Well, we had a spiritual community back in the 60s and early 70s that was very sort of next to the earth. And we would travel as monks, you know, without any money and not having any idea where we'd end up, just sort of telling people how wonderful everything really was and how dreadful humanity was. It was one of those end-of-the-world groups that flourished in the late 60s.
Wow. That must have been
how long
interesting.
We were. Mm.
But yeah. you studied under a lot of different like shamans and stuff, right?
You know, not really studied. My path has been actually more one of entheogens and using power plants to actually reflect a much, for me, more basic teacher. I got very distrustful of teachers over my early life. And indeed, part of the group I was part of kind of went a little crazy because one of the women in it, who very powerful, a psychic woman, kind of took over. So I got a little bruised on that, so I decided I would much more, you know, willingly and interestingly use the, you know, nature's given ways of understanding oneself.
Right. Probably very wise. So three books, huh?
Four books, actually.
Four, wow.
Four books, and the fifth book, which is just it's just cooking along. One of the publishers is looking at it at the moment and trying to decide whether to publish it or not. The Heliang proposition, it's called.
Okay, well, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Bennett, and our guest tonight is Timothy Wiley. This is a call-in show, so if you guys have out there would like to call in, ask any questions, we do have a number. It's 877-876-5227, and we are talking with Timothy Wiley about his books and his experiences. Now, your first book, Dolphins, Extraterrestrials, and Angels, what led to that? What inspired that?
I really didn't know it was a book. I keep quite an extensive journal and have for many years, and got interested in dolphins after I saw a couple of incidents on films that scientists had taken, which were so clear to me that they were telepathic incidents, and yet not commented on in the films at all, probably not even noticed. So I just decided to go down, find a pod of dolphins, and splash out with them and see if they really were telepathic.
Well, wait, back up for a second. What were these incidents that made you think that they were telepathic?
Well, one was a film by an English scientist called, I believe, Horace Dobbs, and it was an elaborate construct. He was towing a boy on a surfboard behind a motorboat with a dolphin playing, and a situation happened in which it was so obvious that the dolphin had picked up something that the man had said to his companion when they were in the motorboat some 90 feet ahead of the dolphin. And the dolphin had responded as the man was talking in the middle of the sentence. I saw it happen. And I said to myself, that's extraordinary, you know. I ran the film back a few times. And I said, well, yeah, okay, let me go down and see. So I went down to Clearwater in Florida and just sat on the beach meditating, and ping, into my meditation swam the dolphin.
Wow.
Out into the water splashed I.
Wow. You know, I heard this one story that is just shows how intelligent I think dolphins are, and which this lady was watching a baby dolphin in the tank through a window, and she was smoking a cigarette, and she breathed in the cigarette, and she blew this cigarette smoke out on the glass, and it kind of just spread out in a circle and dissipated, and the baby dolphin was watching this with rapt interest, and then it turned away and ran over to its mother and started drinking milk from it, and then came back suddenly and blew the milk onto the glass from the other side.
Wonderful.
In imitation.
Wonderful. Yes.
Isn't that just a really beautiful... It shows how intelligent they are, and scientists actually now have admit that dolphins have an additional cortex above and beyond our own. So, a lot of, you know, animals, large animals and dinosaurs had very small brains, but dolphins
Indeed.
Have very, very large brains. So they are very intelligent, whether they're non-human intelligence. So this is, I'm really excited about this subject because I've had some dolphin experiences myself. I got really interested in them years back for some reason, and I just read everything I could on them.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think they're a portal to higher intelligence. I think when we discover in our own searches for our own higher intelligence, if we ever find it, you know, sooner or later we bump against the dolphins, who, you know, in a sense are another sentient species who inhabit this planet alongside us. You know, it's possible there are more dolphins than there are humans. One doesn't know what goes on there in the middle of the ocean. In about the 90s, in the middle of the 90s, I got a very clear message from the dolphins that I had done enough work with them, in a sense. I'd gone as far as I could go with them. I knew really what they were about. I knew a bit about their mythology, you know, what they were doing in suiciding themselves and all that sort of thing. I had a pretty clear idea. And so they pretty much passed me over to the angels. They said, enough of us. That work with the angels now. So it's kind of like moving through this sort of series of portals. And now I'm, you know, over the last few years, been very involved with a deeper sort of extraterrestrial examination of an entity, which I think has been here for a very long time. Anyway, I'm sorry, you may ask a question.
Well, I'm interested in what more about the dolphin and extraterrestrial connection and, you know, how you came to write this book, which is really, you know, I think the only book like it out there. There's been nothing written about this dolphin alien connection. There's another guy, I remember Lee Chardell,
mm-hmm.
Went on the lecture circuit claiming to have photographed a dolphin ET. And I remember looking at the photograph, and most people were very skeptical, as was I, but you know, I've talked to a few people who said they'd seen dolphins aboard UFOs. As hard as that is to believe, but it's true. So
there's clearly a strong connection. I think that opening shot of Cocoon was a very nice little gestalt, you know, with the ship coming down and all the dolphins squeaking around. Clearly, I mean, you know, the planet is whatever it is, sort of almost 7/8 or 7/9 water. It's clear that the extraterrestrials coming and going would use the water. more likely than the land. There's a very interesting thing that was happening in Australia when I was down there. There was a grid that the extraterrestrials had put out offshore off the coast there near Nambucca, and dolphins would swim in there. They'd be drawn in there and then pulled up into through a beam up into ships where they would be healed of the kind of pollutants that are happening in the waters at the moment, and then pop down again. And this has been seen by, you know, a number of reputable people, and have been actually drawn by somebody. You know.
Okay, now wait, let me get this right. People were actually seeing this physically? They were seeing dolphins physically being taken up?
As far as I can make out, yes.
Wow.
Yes, I found that in these situations it doesn't serve to really make an enormous differentiation between whether somebody has seen it physically or whether they've perceived it in some sort of like trance state or maybe even a dream state.
Right. Well, I keep forgetting, of course, the astral body is the superior body and all
yes,
of that.
Yes, exactly. You know, we make it awfully simplistic with just our three-dimensional reality, but of course there are, you know, a number of bodies. Yeah.
Right. People always ask me, well, are the ETs interdimensional? And I say, well, yes, they are.
Some certainly are,
but,
yeah.
But we are too, right?
Say what?
I mean, people ask me if the ETs are interdimensional. I say, yes, they are, but we are too. We are as well.
Well, yes,
they may have mastered it better.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, you know, in a sense that our planet is also, as a living being, you know, is also moving up through its chakras. It's moving from third to fourth density. So, you know, we're kind of trailing along with it in a sense. But, you know, we've got a ship over the Manzanas here out in New Mexico, an Arcturian mothership that they say is parked in the fifth dimension, which would be, for me, the kind of the angelic dimension. They say they're a couple of thousand years ahead of us and here just to kind of give us encouragement. Wonderful book. You've probably come across it. We the Arcturians.
I have heard of it.
Arcturians. Yeah,
right.
Have you come across it?
I have not read that, but I do know of it.
It's well worth looking into. It's a very, very nicely done book. Very clean. In that the woman came out of the blue. She was a professor at the university. Absolutely came out of the blue on
right.
The computer.
Right. So the dolphin UFO connection, what is that mostly about? Do you just...
This planet's a very important little planet. About to become one of the most important planets in this local universe very soon. Everybody's here. Very exciting. Lots of experiments going on. Incarnate angels, lots of incarnate ETs. Wasn't Billy Meyer told in 1979 that something like 75 civilizations were looking, observing us? I think that's up from now. So when people talk about extraterrestrials, are they interdimensional? Yes, of course. They come from everywhere. All over the place and all over the time as well.
Right.
They're very interested in us right now.
So your second book.
What?
Your second book, Ask Your Angels.
Yes. That was when the dolphins turned me over to the angels, and I became extremely interested after the angelic experiences I'd had up in Toronto, where the angels had broken through this channel, had said, well, listen, you can do this for yourselves. You know, just work at it. And it took me a couple of years of study and talk and, you know, internal relaxing and everything until I was able to really be able to establish quite a profound dialogue with one of my two companion angels. And then that developed into helping other people make contact with their guardian angels, which then developed into workshops, which then developed into the book because it could reach a lot more people, they told us.
Right.
And three people wrote the book, which was interesting. We all three wrote it together. Quite a challenge, but since we were given the coordinating angel with whom we were all in contact and who would coordinate our stuff between us, it all seemed rather miraculous, like riding a wave of miracles. It's wonderful.
Wow. So which angel, did this angel have a name? Was male or female? Or
The one that took care of us, the coordinating angel, Abigail, she was called.
Abigail.
Mm. And one of us saw it as male, and the other two saw it as female. So, what do you know? They're not sexed creatures. They're not sexed. They have gender, but they don't have sex.
Were they ever human?
No, no, they're different gender. They're different genders, different creatures, like cats and dogs, different.
So they've never been, like, physical? They've never incarnated physically?
Very rarely one will incarnate down for a specific task, and there is actually a cosmic conspiracy going on right now where they are actually folding angels down into mortal bodies, but it's so exceptional and so weird and outrageous that nobody quite believes it's happening. Best not to talk too much about it.
So what did you ask the angels and put in this book? What were some of the experiences and questions and things like that?
Well, we opened it up pretty much. The three of us told our own stories of how we'd come in contact with our angels. We opened it up into other people's stories, which was quite interesting. We gave a brief history of the angels, as was pretty much sort of guided by a coordinating angel, Abigail, through the sort of the history of the kind of the waves in which the angels have manifested to us, and we're in the third wave of this manifestation of angels. And then she came up with this process that she called the grace process, which was so fundamental, and I mean, I use it to this day. It takes a little time to start with, but one can get it down really fast. But it's a way of getting rid of all these psychic accretions, all these thought forms, fear-impacted thought forms, she calls them, that we carry around in our auras, in our etheric bodies, that sooner or later dump down into the physical unless we take care of them in the emotional or in the spiritual and the mental. So this grace process that she gave us was how to ground ourselves, to grace, how to release. Right? So what you do is you locate the various different aspects of oneself that, contain all the impossibilities, or I'm not worthy, or I shouldn't be doing this, or it's against my religion, or whatever. They're able to release all those. And then the A is for aligning, then one can align one chakras. Grace C, conversing. It is possible, if one focuses on the fifth chakra in the throat, once one has released various different impossibilities and unworthiness, to talk to the angels in a very straight and direct way. It takes a bit of nerve, a lot of transparency. The angels are not the sort of prissy Victorian things that we've come to believe that they are. They're much more direct and fiery and truth-saying. So one best be prepared to hear the truth and one wants to work with the angels.
Well, when you're communicating with an angel, you hear it in your mind's eye? Do you see images as well?
Different people do it in different ways. I think the thing one firstly has to open to is the realization that the angel wants to talk to you. You know, and if you can form that bond, then you can find some people, for instance, use dreams. I personally, since I'm a writer, I like to just, you know, sit in meditation with a notebook on my lap and just write. And I've worked it out with my various different contact, angelic contacts, that they don't kind of dump too much on me at once, you know, and take care of my tender little human frame and blah, 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 and I can write it all down. So that's how I do it. Other people do it in different ways. Some people do it with tape recorders. Some people get images. Some people get smells. I get smells, actually. I always know when angels are around. I get that wonderful wildflower smell.
Really? Wow. That's interesting. So does everyone have angels around them? Is that true? Like spirit guides?
Yes. Yes, yes. Everybody does have angels. Yeah. To various degrees of intention, if you like. I mean, the more interested or the more involved one becomes in the sense of aligning oneself with one's higher purpose, put it that way, the more the angels are interested in one, because really they're pattern carriers, they're messengers, so, you know, messengers of God, to use that terminology, but they're pattern carriers. For instance, if I'm writing a book, I'll ask a specific angel to come in and help me, and they won't exactly dictate to me, but I'll kind of get sort of allow sort of coherent thought process to come through. And I always get this little kind of frisson, you know, like knock at exactly my hair standing up in my back, but it's a little free sound of excitement. If I get it right, you know, if I feel it's aligned with what Jaguar wants, you know. So I think one can call in angels for lots of things. They're here to help us, for goodness sake. They know it's a difficult planet. They know our lives mostly are pretty hellish. They're very admiring of us. They don't have quite our emotional toughness. So they wonder why we go through all the things we go through, but we seem to need it.
So why do you suppose we go here down to Earth? What's your theory on that?
I think this is a very special time. I think there are those of us who have reincarnated here and those of us who are just lucky to be born here, first-timers. Lucky things. But there are a lot of incarnates coming in now, and I think we've come in for the big show, you know. The big joke, as they call it.
So what does that mean? Is the planet turning into the fifth dimension? Is the veil between the worlds getting thin? Are the aliens going to show themselves? Is society going to collapse?
All of the above and much more. I'm sure the firmament's going to do their thing as well. And perhaps even the rapture thrown into the Christians. Why not? No, I think it's, as far as I can make out, you know, we're pretty far down the the line of the wave of intelligence that is sweeping through the universe, put it that way. And I think that, you know, all these various different intelligent groupings of planets gradually sort of start resonating into a higher vibrational frequency. And in a sense, that's really what's happening to us. And so, yes, I think, you know, we're very close to rejoining whatever, call it the Galactic Federation or whatever. And I think that we're going to be much more closely in contact with our angels. We'll probably be much more in contact with other planets through all these various different broadcast circuits they've got running through the universe. It's like ultra microwave frequencies, whatever they use.
Right.
So, yeah, I know things are going to change. And politically, it's beginning to become very important, too. Politically, in terms of galactic politics.
Exactly,
yeah. Sort of center.
So, have you ever seen a UFO or had a UFO experience?
I have, yes. I've had many.
Oh, really? Well, please, share.
Some more subtle than others. Well, the one I write about in my first book is probably the most in-your-face I've had, which was in New York with a couple of pals on Labor Day 1981. And we were up to some no good, I expect. We looked up, and there was this perfectly, I don't know, it's like if you ever wanted to flee a flying saucer, this was it. It looked perfectly like a flying saucer. It's wonderfully so. It's just cruising across the sky, no sound at all. Hard to know how high or how far away it is, because you never quite tell, but I held my hand out, and it was about the size of a dime at arm's length. So it's pretty substantial size. Coppery, orangey, sort of bluish. And my girlfriend there took a little photograph of it with a boxy brown camera, which actually a spot did come out on it, but it's such a pathetic little camera, it didn't really do much good. But at least something was there. And it did a little bob, it bobbed its wings a little bit, and I thought that was sweet. I kind of felt a sort of little jab of recognition. Anyway, that would have been all fine. Had not this little young kid, about 7, 8, 9 years old, perhaps, with a thick European accent, walked up and says, "Oh, don't take any notice of that. That's just a star car." This is 1981. I'd never heard of star car, and still, star car's not a sort of vox populi star car. So I said, "Oh, well, my boy, what's a star car?" And he said, "Well, it's a single person craft generally used by tourists and explorers." My goodness, I said, "Is it?" I said, "How does it work?" He said, "Well, it doesn't have any actually independent propulsion, I think." He said, "It works on a Mali particle communication beam." I think I'm fluffing it up a little bit here because it happened some years ago. But anyway, he started talking about this beam that pulled it into a mothership. And I said, "Well, come and tell me all about it." And soon we were talking about the politics of the universe and whether there were war on other planets and he reeled out the number of this particular planet and the system. I asked him to repeat the numbers, and he got them right both times. I was writing them down. So I mean, it was a very, very disturbing and authentic experience. I had no idea how it happened. Was he a mouthpiece? Was he a holographic? I don't think he was a holographic projection, because I put my hands on his chest at one moment and asked him directly, "Are you a holographic projection?" No, he said. No, he wasn't.
Wow.
For goodness knows. I know. Anyone wants to read the fuller description, because he's really very interesting about politics, for instance. He said, no, there's a system called Enthesis. It's a one-person, one-vote system where everybody gets to vote in terms of what their preferences are, what they're interested in. So it's like everybody has a little machine. I mean, we could do this here. Everybody had a little machine. And on that little machine, all the things that are important would come up, just like on a TiVo. And you could sort of put a subcategory of the things you're vitally interested in. And you could vote on them when they came up. A little ringer in your pocket. Buzz. Do you want to vote on the Panama Canal? Buzz. Yes. No. We could do it. Be foolproof.
That's a great idea.
Anyway, it's something like that they've got going out there called Enthesis. Wow. This is for a 7-year-old. Now, I mean, I read my comics. I've never heard of this sort of stuff. Anyway. That kind of blew my mind. And then I've had a couple of these local lads walk in my bathroom. A few years ago, I was in my bath. I look up and I see one of these Arcturian creatures with one of his tall friends along with him. So we have a nice little 20-minute conversation, which I have completely amnesed, except I journaled about it afterwards, but I have so many journals I can't find it.
Wow.
I said, I'll find it when I need to write about it.
What did they look like?
One was short and a little ugly. I didn't want to look at them too carefully. A little angular, I thought. More sort of crystalline than anything else. Maybe it was more sort of automaton of some sort. The Nordic, I think, the other one was very tall. Rather sort of in a fantasy direction, but kind of beautiful.
They were there to receive direction?
I don't think they were there to... No, I don't think so. I think they were there to discuss something or other. We made an appointment to see each other again, and I faithfully followed their instructions. And something very weird happened. They didn't turn up, but two other people turned up. Excuse me, right in the middle of the desert, in the middle of nowhere, middle of the night, 1 o'clock in the morning, which is where I had made to meet. And these two people turned up. Two innocent Midwestern people. Out of nowhere. They must have seen the fire some miles away and had trekked over to see if there's anything wrong. It was such a funny divine joke. I come to rather expect that, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. It's bizarre, the coincidences and stuff that happens.
Isn't it wonderful? It kind of pushes us along. It lures us along. You know, people say, well, why don't they land on the White House lawn? Well, they tried that in 1954 and it didn't work. It's much more entertaining than they just, you know, touch us all individually.
Right.
One by one, we're ready.
Which they're doing, definitely. That's what I tell people who are skeptical. I say, well, ask everyone you know, people you trust, if they've ever had a UFO experience. And I think you'll be surprised to find, because that's how I was skeptical. And I asked everyone I knew, and I found 5 people who had been on board these craft.
Yes. So. I know, it's disturbing, isn't it? The most skeptical people I've come across are themselves incarnate ETs who have amnesed and blocked away that aspect of themselves.
Oh, you can sense that in someone?
A lot of these very skeptical people who really want to prove that ETs don't exist. The ETs themselves, yes, they reject themselves. A common disease in our society.
Well, the fact that the ETs look just like us and raises a lot of questions about human origins.
Oh, it does.
We didn't come from here.
Oh, no. And yes, and anyway, it's much more complicated even than that, isn't it? It's not just simply where we biologically came from, but it's our spiritual heritages as well. You know, we didn't just manifest bonk on this planet. know.
Right, right. I've been told I've had past lives as an alien. And I actually remember some of my past lives, not as aliens, but I believe as a human being. But I don't know if it's possible.
One's never quite sure, you see, on what planet one's on. It's generally not explained in the when one gets to one's past life. I think we reincarnate, those of us who have reincarnated, we've reincarnated through a fairly set number of star systems on various different dimensional levels. I think the Pleiades, the Sirius, Arcturus, I think that's why they're interested in us, Antares, Orion, who are always messing with us, been messing with us for years, Ursa Major. That's pretty much it.
Wow.
And kind of cycling down through these incarnations. But I've been shown, for what it's worth. I don't think it's still important to get hung up on previous incarnations, unless one is got stuck, unless something is stuck in one's aura or one of one's more sensitive bodies. And I've come across a lot of situations in which people, especially death experiences, get stuck, and one has to release it before one can kind of move into the more subtle realms.
All right, it's funny you say that, because when I remember a past life, I'll be like out of body, and I'll say, show me a past life. And what happens is I'm taken to the death scene, usually, or the most profound moment in that lifetime.
Right.
And it's usually the
and
death
have you scene. Found it that, have you found that whatever happened in that death scene, it somehow you carry that resonance, like a fear of water if you drowned or whatever it is, into this lifetime?
To some extent, mostly interest. Yeah, I've got this like insane interest in ships and shipwrecks. And so
right.
I did that exercise, and the next thing I remember, I'm on board this ship, and I couldn't even see the ship. It just sank so quickly, and I knew I was surrounded by lots of young men, and all I could think of was all these men are drowning, and I drowned too.
Right.
So,
yeah.
But I still love ships. I love the sea. So. That's part of it.
I heard a wonderful story, Preston, if I've got time to tell it, just a couple of times.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
I was giving one of these radio, just like this, actually, a phone-in down in Louisiana, and a tugboat operator phoned in, rough old man. He said, listen, I have never told anyone this story before, but since you're talking about angels, let me tell you this. He said there was was running a tug on one of these, I think it might have been in the Gulf, and something went wrong with, I think, an oil platform or something, and they had to tow it back in bad weather. And they had the mic attachment going, and they also, had a chain, which they were pulling the thing. The chain broke, and the thing started sinking, and there were men inside it. And through the microphone, they heard firstly the men screaming, and then a complete silence. And then the men all started saying, oh, my God, oh my God, look at this. We're surrounded by angels, my God. And then everything went into ecstasy. He said it was the most extraordinary thing he'd ever heard.
Wow.
Big old thing.
Yeah, there's a lot going on around us, I think, that people are just not even aware of. And if they could just meditate and just raise their vibration and concentrate on the chakras, they'd start seeing things and piercing through the veil and having clairvoyance and all of this.
That's it.
Right?
But I think it has to be purposeful, you see. It has to be done with intent. It can't really be just a sort of like a Ouija board, It can get pretty scary if one does that. There has to be a fairly pure intent, to know something, to understand something, generally something for the best of all rather than for the best of me, So I think that's just a precautionary thing. And also people are attracted to these areas when they're ready, I think. Don't you find that?
Right, yeah, I think so. You can't force open a flower. You can't force anyone to... Right, and that's kind of what
time release. It's all a time release deal anyway. Everybody's going to be awake for whatever the big show is, and nobody can really say what that's going to be or when it's going to be. Let's hope it's in 2012. We can get it over with quickly.
Right. Well, some people could go right through, 2012, and there's going to be a huge transformation, and they won't even see it. I've interviewed people who've seen UFOs, followed them home, and they still don't believe in UFOs. So.
Yeah.
Skepticism can be very powerful. Well, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight is Timothy Wiley. That's W-Y-L-L-I-E. And you have a website, right? TimothyWiley.com?
That's right. And I try and keep it up as much as possible.
Wow, so 11 languages, Ask Your Angels has been translated into. What languages, if I may ask?
I'm not sure. I could even remember them all. All the normal ones, French, German, Italian, some unusual ones, Hungarian, I believe, Portuguese, Spanish, and very unusually Japanese, believe it or not.
Well, I have one of my books translated into Icelandic, which is, I don't know what the chances of that are.
Wonderful, isn't it? How did you manage that?
It was just one of those things that happened.
I know. They come out of the blue. And the dolphins, the ETs and angels, was translated into Japanese fairly early on. And, you know, they really don't have a very developed idea of angels in their culture. And I was amazed when they translated Ask Your Angels into Japanese. So, who knows? But, you know, there are more and more people waking up all over the world. You know, I've heard recently, I'd heard about 15 years ago that there were some like 60 million specifically of reincarnates and light workers of one sort or another. And I was told quite recently it was up to 90 million and counting, you know, almost all, but very many of the young ones coming in now. That they're calling indigo children or water babies or whatever, are very developed souls and really here for the show.
All right. Well, apparently that's what Earth has got something going on, because there's all kinds of different ETs showing up. All this stuff is going on. There's no doubt there's some sort of spiritual transformation.
I think so. I don't know if you were following Phil Krapp's episode with the Verdants. Do you know the Verdant story?
I do.
And they wanted to sort of colonize us, kind of look after us, you know, let us ride on their spaceships, and they were pretty much firmly told to back off.
Wow.
Back off, Boogaloo. They said, you're out of your depth here. And they'd come a zillion light years to be here. They come barging in. Some ETs don't have that much manners.
Well, we're approaching the end of our show tonight. Timothy, gosh, it's been so interesting. It went pretty quickly.
So, what was that?
What, is there any last messages you want to leave with our listeners tonight? You've got four books up, five books? What's your latest book?
Latest book is a book that will be coming out probably next year called The Heliax Proposition, or The Return of the Rainbow Serpent. And it's a work about an extraterrestrial entity that I've been tracking for most of my adult life, which came here many millions of years earlier and mixed with the human stock at a very early stage. And it has left its imprint in our cellular structure. I was very interested in that. The Heliax Proposition, it's called.
The Heliax Proposition. Very, very interesting. Wow.
If you go to my site, TimothyWiley.com, you get a sort of taste of it if you just press the Heliax button.
Well, we'll have to have you back on the show once that comes out.
I'd love to. I'd love to press it. It's good to talk after all these years.
Yeah, same here. Well, thanks again, Timothy. We'll definitely talk again. All right, everyone, that's our show for tonight. You've been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett. Our guest has been Timothy Wiley. He's got four books out, more on the way, including Ask Your Angels, Adventures Among Spiritual Intelligences, and Dolphins, Extraterrestrials, and Angels, which was published in 1984 and is still in print. So check it out. I'm sure you won't be disappointed. And thanks again for listening. Next week, our guest will be Sid Schultz, and we're going to be talking about Pasadena ghosts And he's the director, actually, of the Pasadena Paranormal Research Society. So that should be pretty interesting. Hope you all can join us. Until then, thanks for listening, and have a great evening.